Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
This month, 100 years ago, the first general election in the history of this state took place. The election was held less than 3 months after the formal end of the Civil War, and the pro-treaty victors in that war were very keen to match their military success with political victory. It was also a serious test for democracy in the fledgling new state at a time of intense, bitter divisions. Joining us to discuss its significance and its legacy is Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern History at UCD. Good morning to you, Diarmaid.
Morning, Phil.
If this was a Netflix box set, we'd be on episode 9, and right now I'd be saying previously on Ireland, and we'd be saying we had two elected representatives, two parliaments effectively in the country in the run to this, one of which was acknowledged by, recognised by the British, and the other which had the legitimacy of the Irish state because there was an election to it. But it was all very messy and very confusing. So what was needed in August of 1923 was an election.
A normal election. Some historians have referred to it as the first normal election since 1910. And of course, the First World War had interrupted. There had been a general election, obviously, in 1918. And then in 1922, as the clouds of civil war were gathering. So this was an opportunity to establish that the Parliament, the Dáil, would be supreme. Well, that was the hope, certainly, of the pro-treaty side. So the timing was interesting. I mean, it was the first general election since the enactment of the Free State Constitution, so it did carry a significance. The turnout was quite low at 64%, which would suggest a degree of apathy and exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And we do have to factor that into thinking about 1923. There was great weariness after all of the conflict and the various divisions over the treaty.
Small footnote, little aside that's worth making. First election, universal suffrage. Well, sorry, 21, wasn't it?
Well, that was hugely important because women had equal status to men when it came to the franchise for the first time. Women over the age of 30 with property qualifications could vote in 1918. But this was a universal suffrage for men and women over the age of 21. And it meant that the electorate was significantly mm-hmm. expanded as well.
But we didn't turn out in our droves.
No, we didn't. And it was a public holiday. It was declared a public holiday to encourage people to vote. 64% was respectable. It wasn't that impressive. But what was, I suppose, impressive was that it was relatively quiet. We have to remember that the Civil War had only ended about 12 weeks previously. It had formally ended. But violence didn't disappear. It kind of dribbled away. There was still a degree of revenge in the air. Mm. There were attacks, there was some intimidation. But overall, it was a peaceful election, and that in itself was quite significant.
Do you think that people might have been confused about what the National Party and the Republican Party stood for and where they stood on the end of that?
Oh, you never insult the intelligence of the Irish electorate, far from it. They're hugely engaged politically when it comes to their representatives. They may, some of them, of course, have issues with the legitimacy of the state, and therefore many of them perhaps decided I'm not going to vote, I'm not going to recognise this. But there's an intense engagement, and the way politics was conducted a century ago, you're talking about public meetings, you're talking about people having very direct access to those who are standing before them for the Parliament. It's also expanded. The number of Dáil seats increases from 128 to 153. So there are more candidates. There are 376 candidates who stand for election. Only seven of them, interestingly, were women. Five of them were elected. But they're very lively, these election rallies and the meetings and the debates. And of course, you have huge controversy in the middle of the campaign because Éamon de Valera is arrested at an election rally in O'Connell Square in Ennis, which was his constituency. And he had said nothing would stop him speaking but a bullet. And of course, there's a very real possibility that a bullet could stop him speaking. There is that atmosphere around. There's a degree of consternation on the part of the government that, you know, damage or even the death of Éamon de Valera would have been sensational development. But of course, it also made him a martyr to free speech.
I was going to say, did it help him?
Of course it helped him, yeah. And he topped the poll in his constituency of Clare. One of his running mates, he had nearly three quotas. One of his running mates, Brian Higgins, received 115 votes. He was the last of the 15 candidates and he managed to get elected on one of the later counts, such as the surplus. So a lot of the big hitters got huge personal votes. People like Richard Mulcahy on the pro-treaty side. W.T. Cosgrave, who was head of government, and Eamon de Valera himself. And of course, Frank Aiken, who was chief of staff of the IRA, topped the poll in Louth. And the result is a surprise. This is the interesting thing. Cumann na Gael is the new political organisation for the pro-treaty Sinn Féin. They now have a new organisation since April 1923. And their slogan is really safety first. You know, we are going to protect what has been gained, the sovereignty that has been gained. You cannot trust the alternative. But ultimately, they only win 63 seats. They had hoped to win over 80. And Sinn Féin, Republican Sinn Féin, anti-treaty Sinn Féin, they win 44 seats, which was a surprise, and suggests they have a very considerable base from which to build. So even with De Valera in prison, that didn't seem to do their prospects any damage.
And once again, we see Mr. De Valera's flexibility come into play here, because this was an illegitimate body to which people were seeking election. But then, oh, look, aren't we very popular with
the Irish
people?
We're very popular.
So perhaps we need to go into that illegitimate body and represent those people.
And not only that, but he had nearly a year in prison. He went into Arbour Hill to reflect on where he would go next. They were abstaining. Even with their 44 seats, they weren't going to go into the Dáil. But that's a political no man's land for De Valera, you know, who's quite pragmatic, and he wants to see, can he come up with an alternative? That ultimately becomes Fianna Fáil. He has to part ways with Sinn Féin. He had a lot of time to reflect on that, to reflect on his mistakes from 1922 and 1923 and the loss, of course, of some close colleagues and the deaths that had occurred during the Civil War. But he is plotting. He has time to think, and he has time to reimagine the future of Irish Republicanism.
And was it a cynical or a pragmatic conclusion that he arrived at?
Both. It is pragmatic in the sense that he cannot identify, as he admits privately, with the incorruptible sea green Republicans, you know. So he is on the more pragmatic wing of Sinn Féin, and he carries considerable authority. I mean, he was introduced on the platforms as the President of the Irish Republic, but he's not comfortable in that Sinn Féin space. And of course, some would say, well, why couldn't you have made this decision at an earlier stage, which would have prevented such conflict in Ireland? I mean, that debate will always rage. So it's a mixture. You know, De Valera, of course, is ultimately thinking as well about his own political status and his own reputation.
Yeah. On the other side of the house, they had lost two of the big figures, Michael Collins and Arthur Griffith, just in the months before this election. How does this government, how do the figures of this government fare without them?
Cosgrave is quite impressive. You know, he's a doughty campaigner. He's a good speaker. He's aggressive on the campaign trail. They employ 40 paid organisers, Cumann na Gael, which of course Sinn Féin weren't able to match that. They had a very rudimentary organisation. And he takes them on. You know, you can see him. He takes on the women in particular. You know, he suggests a lot of the women who are Republicans and heckling him should be at home knitting, or should have their rosary beads in their hands at least. He's quite dismissive of the extremism, as he sees it, of the Republican women. But he also chastises those who claim he's not a Republican, including those who were not active in 1916. And Cosgrave makes the point, of course, that he has that pedigree. So they're not allowing Sinn Féin to have a monopoly when it comes to claims of Republican virtue. But at the same time, you know, the slogan and the message that they're communicating is not a particularly positive one. They're focusing on the dangers of the alternative. They're focusing on safety first and the need for security. And they're acknowledging that there are grim years ahead. You know, the public services budget, for example, in 1923 was £26 million. £10 million of that had to be spent on security and reconstruction after the Civil War. There's huge infrastructural damage. So there's economic depression. Unemployment is at about 19%. The dockers in Dublin are on strike. Waterford labourers are fighting and on strike. So there's a lot of industrial strife.
There's an interesting echo from the past 100 years down of the success of the Farmers' Party.
Yeah.
And perhaps the thing to take note of here is that its success was down to the fact that it represented the richer, the better off, the well-heeled farmers, and not the poorer small farmers.
Well, it disputed that. You know, the Farmers' Union insisted.
That's not what the results
said. You know, those with a valuation on their farms of £5 had an equal vote with those with a valuation of £200. But you're absolutely right. You know, there are very significant commercial interests when it comes to farming. And in a constituency like North Cork, for example, where dairy farming is very strong, The Farmers' Party actually outpoll Cumann na Gael and Sinn Féin. They have very considerable heft. They're led by Denis Gorry, who is in the Carlow Kilkenny constituency. So you have that strand as well. And they outpoll the Labour Party. They win more seats than the Labour Party. They win 15 seats. The Labour Party had fallen back to 14. So it's a very significant result. But Cumann na Gael was furious because it was denting their vote. Because they would have seen the farmers as natural supporters of them. But farmers are dealing with falling prices and agricultural depression. And they're concerned, too, about the great land hunger that exists because the government is promising to try and address that. Is that going to mean some kind of violation of their private property?
1 minute left to us. Is this the election that took the violence out of the conflict but perpetuated the civil war for a generation or two to come?
No, I would see it in a more positive way. It bedded down the importance of elections. The anti-treaty Republicans could see that they had the potential to get a considerable mandate and that they could build on that. Cumann na Gael could, of course, be happy that they were going to be able to continue in government. Theoretically, they're in a minority, but of course, Sinn Féin were abstaining. And it established the precedent and it set down the structures and it proved that democracy was going to work.
I was going to say, we could legitimately say that we were a democracy.
Yeah,
that
and it has lasted for 100 years. There are a few countries that can make that claim.
All right, Professor Diarmaid Ferriter, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That is all that we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening. Catch up on anything you've missed on the RTE Radio app. The programme was produced by the series producer Alistair McConnell, researcher Kieran Dunn, broadcast coordinator Jarlath Holland, and on sound, Aisling Grofferty. Now, here's Louise Duffy.